ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। So in the second chapter, last week we saw the composition of the world, where he talks about mineral kingdom, vegetable kingdom, animal kingdom and human kingdom. And then he says, amongst the human beings also, there are few people who are mineral-like, some are like vegetable, some are like animals. Very rarely you will find a person who is like a human being. Very, very rarely you will find a person who has used the human potential to realize the Godhead within, has become the supreme self, who has realized the self. So very rare is a person who has reached the self. He says, when a person is mineral-like, a person is extremely tamasic, highly selfish, egoistic, doesn't think of anyone else other than himself. Then comes the level of vegetable, where a person can go up to family, person who is like a vegetable. See, plant kingdom is very much dependent on the world, relatively compared to the animals. So these people are also very highly dependent, their desires and everything. And they only are concerned about their family, nothing beyond. Then comes the animal man. Animal person may be going up to the community. Then when you come to the human level, human being, he says, the person who identifies with human species and, you know, stops there. But when you come to God, God man, you identify with every being. Your love is universal, not referential. So all these, like I said, there is in degree. You know, you can't specifically say this fellow is vegetable because he's only identified with the family. Little bit of identification may be there with community also. Similarly, animal, all this. But ultimately, what you need to understand is the identification is at a smaller circle, not encompassing everyone. The next topic is three conditions of the mind. Please read the three conditions of the mind. Chapter 2, three conditions of it.
Three conditions of the mind. The five categories of human beings fall under three broad mental conditions. Restless mind, imperfect mind, perfect mind. Restless mind. A self-centered person is concerned only with himself. He focuses his interest and attention upon his individual self. His action and perception, emotion and thought are all directed to his own welfare. He finds no interest in anyone else. But the world is not designed to cater to a particular individual. As a result, his desires remain frustrated. They cause mental agitation. His mind remains ever discontented and disturbed. This type of mind is like a cone positioned on its vertex as shown in figure 1. A cone on its vertex can never remain stable. So is a restless mind.
So, this one mind can be divided into three conditions. One is restless, imperfect and perfect. And this is based on the selfishness, the self-centeredness and the egoistic attitude in life. A restless mind is that which is extremely, extremely selfish. So there is a self-centered person is concerned only with himself. He focuses his interest and attention upon his individual self, his action, perception, emotion, thought, are all directed to his own welfare. He finds no interest in anyone else. See, all he's trying to say is, a mind which is highly, highly selfish, will be all the time restless because it is like a cone resting on its apex. A cone cannot rest on its apex without support from outside. Similarly, people who are extremely self-centered, they have too many desires pertaining to themselves. And world is not designed to cater to one individual's likes and dislikes. So there will be, at all given point in time, some desires or the other are not met. So they will be constantly disturbed. That's what he's saying. The world is not designed to cater to a particular individual. As a result, his desires remain frustrated. They cause mental agitation. His mind remains ever discontented and disturbed. This type of mind is at a cone position on its vertex as shown in figure 1. So, this is a beautiful example actually. Swami Ramakrishna gives in his talks. He gives the example of a pencil, a sharpened pencil. He says it cannot stand on its apex. It has to be stand on its base. Similarly, the same example Swami gives with another one which is cone. Cone cannot stand on its apex. It can only stand on its base. But when it is too self-centered, when the mind is too self-centered, extreme dependence is there on the world also. The moment there is too much of desire, there is mental agitation. Because not all your desires will be fulfilled at all times. You will be constantly restless. That's all it is. Next, imperfect mind.
Imperfect mind. As the person moves up to the higher categories of humans, his mind becomes stabler. It does not topple over all the time as would a restless mind. But when someone insults him, flings a nasty remark at him, his mind becomes agitated. The agitations may last for hours, sometimes for days or months. A single incident can keep the mind disturbed for a long period. Even before the mind could settle down, perhaps another agency can create further mental agitation. A single disturbance can play havoc. Such a mind is termed imperfect. It acts like a cone lying on its side on a smooth surface, as in figure 2. A cone lying on its side may normally be at rest, but when tapped on one side, it starts oscillating from one side to the other. Another tap before or after it stops creates further oscillation. The impact from an external agency may be only for a moment, but when the consequent oscillation can continue, but the consequent oscillation can continue for long. Similarly, an imperfect mind goes on oscillating, swaying, agitating, makes life miserable. You must learn to withstand external disturbances. They are an inevitable part of life. Do not allow them to agitate your mind, destroy your peace and harmony within.
So, an imperfect mind is slightly, definitely better than the restless mind. It is like a cone resting on its side. By itself, it will be in rest. But if someone comes and taps it, it starts oscillating. Sometimes it oscillates just for minutes, few minutes or for a few hours or a few days. Similarly, by itself, an imperfect mind may be peaceful. But if somebody comes and says something which is unacceptable, then the mind starts getting disturbed. And the disturbance can be lasting just for a week or a month or months or years. This mind is also not a very well developed mind, but definitely much better than the restless state of mind. Restless state of mind is extremely selfish. You can say mineral man and vegetable man may follow this. And imperfect mind is of the animal man. Animal man is very emotional. You know, he may identify with a slightly larger circle, but being emotional, not able to control his emotions, not able to control his desire for having a good name. You know, I'm doing so much for my community. I need to be considered by them as a good person. So that kind of a mind, generally it is relatively stable because it identifies with a larger circle. See, the larger the identification, greater the stability. Please understand. The larger the identification, the greater the stability. But it is not the ultimate, right? You see, he's not gone to the height where he identifies with the entire universe. Therefore, such a person also, there is a lot of oscillation. Some people may come and call some names and you may be agitated for years to come. What is that person thinking about me? What is this person thinking about me? Being affected by other people's opinion, that is an imperfect mind. Continue.
Perfect mind. A fully evolved person is free from mental agitation. His mind is tranquil, peaceful. He is the same in the best or worst of environment, situation or circumstance. Leave him in heat or cold, he is undisturbed. Give him joy or sorrow, he is unperturbed. Treat him with honor or dishonor, he is unaffected. He remains ever calm and composed, revels in the perfect state of mind. He remains like the cone, resting on its base as in figure 3. Oliver Wendell Holmes Sr. describes such a man in exquisite poetry. For him, in vain the envious seasons roll, who bears eternal summer in his soul. Vedanta would help you reach the perfect state. It provides the technique of disciplining the mind. An indisciplined mind can cause considerable damage, even prove fatal. You must take to daily study of Vedanta, reflect upon the truths therein, apply them to your life. Your mental agitations gradually cease. You live a life of peace and bliss.
So, a perfect mind is the mind of a Sthitaprajna. So, it is human man and God man. In the sense, a person who is able to control his or her emotions, direct towards the higher goal in life, such a mind will be perfect. Not dependent upon the outcome of the action, whereas the rajasic mind is dependent upon the outcome of the action. Right? The restless mind, when you talk about restless mind, the tamasic fellow, highly, highly dependent on the world. And the rajasic fellow will do things, but depend on the result. For the restless fellow, he is dependent on the world to do the action. Whereas the rajasic fellow, who is an imperfect mind, will do the action, but it's dependent upon the result. But the perfect mind person, he does the action and not even dependent upon the result. He doesn't bother about others' opinion. He lives his life as it's to be lived, not bother about what others think about him. For such a person, he's like a cone lying on its base. He's got a solid foundation of knowledge. And you've got your foundation solid, nothing can shake you. That is what he's trying to say here. When there is deep misunderstanding about yourself and the world, then you think this world is for your enjoyment. And then you will be interested only in acquisition and enjoyment. Then you will be either in the restless state or in imperfect state. But when you begin to gain the knowledge, you understand that life is to give, not to take. You've got to do your obligatory actions with no expectations whatsoever. Then honor, dishonor, all these things doesn't matter. Because you are not leading your life to satisfy anybody else. You're leading your life because that's what you think is right, therefore you do that. Such a person cannot be affected by anything. Profit, loss, honor, dishonor, sensual praise, joy, sorrow, nothing affects him because he is rooted in the knowledge of the self. Therefore, that person is not affected by anything. So this Oliver Wendell Holmes Senior's poetry, those two lines, he says, for him in vain the envious season's role, who bears eternal summer in his soul. You know, in England, people are looking forward for the sunlight. That's how they invented cricket game. Because if there is sunny day, they could come out and play the game. So that they can be outside in the sun. But the madness went to the extent where now, they don't play cricket in Sharjah. So, they are looking forward for summer in England. So he says, when the seasons change, they are agitated, they are all looking for summer. But a person who's got the eternal summer within, the seasons change, but it doesn't affect him. So the seasons become envious, it seems. So he says, for him in vain the envious seasons role who bears eternal summer in his soul. That's what he's saying. So you've got to live your life based on knowledge, based on wisdom. Have a correct understanding about yourself and start identifying at the center and not at the periphery. When you do that, then you will have a perfect mind. So, from restless to imperfect to perfect mind, all you need to do is you need to create a solid foundation of knowledge. Then you will identify with the self and not with the circumference. Next chapter, chapter 3, Life is Foolish.
Guruji, I have a question. For like the word selfish, isn't it in a sense like if you're saying the imperfect mind, not the imperfect, the selfish mind and then the perfect mind. But in a sense, isn't the perfect mind also, isn't selfish is not a bad word if you take it in the perception that like actually everything you do, even if you, whatever you do, it's not for somebody else. It's for your own peace of mind or your own, like when you say, oh, today I did this for someone. It's not really that you're doing anything for anyone. You're doing it because you think it's the right thing to do or it gives you peace of mind or it gives you happiness to see that person happy. Or it gives you happiness to, who are you to spread happiness? But like if you see even a attachment person, like even if a husband or a child or a parent or a relative, when you're saying that I'm doing it for so-and-so, it's actually because it brings you happiness. It brings you happiness to give, to see that joy passed on. So even that act is actually in a sense selfish, but like then even the blame is not anywhere external. Everything you do in life is actually for yourself in a sense, even if isn't selfish a very misconstrued word? Like, is it always does it always have to have a negative connotation?
See, selfish when you say, when you cater to your body, mind and intellect at the cost of others' body and intellect, it is selfish. But if you are catering to the self, you are catering to the self in all. Are you with me? So you are not acting with your likes and dislikes. That's what it means. You say, you are not selfish. Now, I ask to Shweta whether it brings happiness or not. But I have to act on my likes and dislikes. So, being in the community, I don't care about others. I will do this at the cost of others for my happiness. That is selfish. But
so when it's at the cost of, it's different, and when it's for
self, first of all, everybody is doing everything for happiness only. Working for your happiness, what is wrong in that? Or you should start working for your unhappiness or what? Obviously, you should be working for your happiness. But when it is true happiness, it will definitely bring happiness to the other also.
Yes, it will, because only then you will get happiness. Because only then you will also feel true happiness is when you're not, of course, if you're causing conflict or harm or anything, you will not get peace of mind or happiness. It will also disturb you or agitate you in some way.
Yes. So what doing what is good for me,
mm-hmm.
what is good for me need not be what is bad for the others. No.
Yes.
We are here talking about what is good in the sense health-wise. For example,
mm-hmm.
you do your exercises, you do your yoga, if you go for a walk, it's good for you. When you do that, mm-hmm. it's good for others also so that you don't become on them. Become dependent on them.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You understand? So that is taking care of yourself. That is self-interest.
Mm-hmm.
That is not mm-hmm. selfish.
So self-interest is different from selfish in yes. that sense. You
exactly. Everybody has to first take care of yourself. Because only if you are strong can you do any service. Like in aircraft, they say, you know, first help yourself with oxygen mask. A time of emergency, the oxygen mask will fall. You help yourself first. After having appropriately put in, and you can breathe properly, then you start helping others. Otherwise, you will suffocate and you suffocate the other person. So, therefore, catering to yourself is not selfish. Catering to your body, mind, intellect at the cost of others, that is selfish. Is this clear?
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you, Guruji. Chapter 3. Life is its course. Composition of life. Life is constituted of experiences. They are of three types. Physical, emotional and intellectual. The quality and quantity of experiences determine the nature of life. If your experiences are happy, your life is happy. If they are unhappy, it is unhappy. If dynamic, it is dynamic. If dull, it is dull. Therefore, to bring about a change in your life, you need to change your experiences.
So, first of all, we need to understand what is life. What is life composed of? Life is constituted of experiences. From in to whom? We go through experiences after experience. So, the experience can be at the physical level or emotional level or intellectual level. The quality and quantity of experience is determined by the nature of life. If your experiences are happy, the life is happy. If the quality is superior. If they are unhappy, it is unhappy. Meaning, if quality is inferior. If your life is very dynamic, you are physically and mentally, dynamically acting, too many experiences, quantitatively rich, it's dynamic. Otherwise, it's dull, lazy, lethargic life, because there are very little experiences you go through. So it's the quantum of experience and the quality of experience. Both matters. Therefore, to bring about a change in your life, you need to change your experiences. You need to make it dynamic. You need to make it happy. You need to bring in both. You need to qualitatively make your life better. And quantitatively also, you need to become more dynamic.
An experience is a unit of life. It is made up of you, the experiencing subject, and the world, the experienced object. The union of the subject and object, you and the world, brings about an experience. It is like a chemical reaction between two chemicals. If you wish to enrich your life, you must deal with its constituents. Improve both the world and you. Study the nature of the world you can contact. Develop it to the extent possible. Also study the structure of your personality. Improve it as well. When the constituents are bettered, the experiences arising out of their union must necessarily improve. Then the law applies. As the experiences, so the life. Your life takes a turn for the better.
So it says, when you understand that life is nothing but experience, then if you take the unit of life, it will be one experience. And an experience is constituted of the subject, you, and the object, the world. So he says, when the subject, you and the object come together, you go through experience. A series of such experiences, life. That's all he says. Union of the subject and object, you and the world, brings about an experience. It is a chemical reaction between two chemicals. If you wish to enrich your life, you must deal with both the constituents. You will take care of both the subject and the object. Improve both. Only improving the world is not going to improve the life. You want to improve life. So if you want to improve life, you need to improve the individual, you need to improve the world as well. You just study the nature of the world you contact. Develop it to the extent possible, as much as possible. To develop the world as much as possible, you have good environment, clean environment, all gadgets that is necessary. Keep a good world around you. But you also have to study your individual personality. You can also study the structure of your personality. Improve it as well. Improve it as well. What is happening is, everybody is striving to have a better house. It should have all the gadgets, if possible, all artificial intelligence should be guiding everything. So when I have such a house, I will be very happy. My life will be very happy. Here, what mistake they are doing is, there's nothing wrong in having a house which is governed by artificial intelligence. But if you haven't developed your individual personality, you will suffer. This is what is happening. We have improved the world at the cost of the individual. This is when the constituents are bettered, experiences arising out of the union must necessarily improve. Then the law applies. As the experiences, so the life. If you want to have a better life, you should make sure you have better experiences. If you want to have better experiences, then you need to take care of both the world and the individual. Both has to be taken care of. Life takes a turn for the better. Continue.
Your life's betterment therefore necessitates a thorough study and analysis of your personality, the world, and your relationship with it. Who is the individual? What is the world like? How much can you improve yourself and the world? What is the right mode of contact? Such analysis and well-determined procedures would help raise the quality of your life.
So here, first of all, you need to really think about yourself. You've got to start investing some time in yourself. This is very, very important. If you want to have a qualitatively and quantitatively superior life, you need to invest some time in yourself. The problem is, when the mind is so extroverted, we don't have time to invest in ourselves. So he says, the life's betterment therefore necessitates a thorough study and analysis of your personality, the world, and your relationship with it. You need to understand the world. You need to understand about yourself. Then you know how to contact the world. The first question, who is this individual? What is the world like? Analyze the individual, analyze the world. How much can you improve yourself and the world? Improve as much as possible. That sky is the limit. You can improve the world even better than what we have today. Please do so. But don't do it at the cost of individual growth, individual development. So he says, both has to be focused on. How much can you improve yourself and the world? What is the right mode of contact? See, if you want to sharpen your knife, I will give you a rough stone. Now, if you don't know how to contact the knife with the rough stone, instead of making it sharp, you'll make it blunt. But if you know how to contact the knife with the stone, the rough stone, then you'll make it sharp. Now, when you don't know how to make it sharp, you'll blame the stone for being rough. Hey, who gave me this stone? It's so rough, it made my knife blunt. The stone has to be rough for the knife to be sharpened. But even if you don't know the art of right contact, you will blame the stone. Similarly, when you don't know how to contact the world, you blame the world for being rough. For not catering to you all the time, you will blame the world. Therefore, he says, you should do these analysis. That analysis, well-determined procedures, help raise the quality of your life. You must spend some time in yourself. At the body level, at the mind level, at the intellect. A good amount of people spend some time for the body. Seldom you find people spending time for the mind and intellect. Very, very rarely you will find a person spending some time on a daily basis for the growth of the mind and intellect. Very rarely you will find somebody spending some time for identifying with the Atma. You want to really have a superior quality of life, you need to improve your individual self and the world. Continue. Next up, the individual mechanism.
The individual mechanism. A human being is composed of spirit and matter. The spiritual component is your real self, known as Atma in Sanskrit. The material layers comprise the physical body, mind and intellect. The physical body is the equipment which perceives and acts. Mind is that which feels emotions. While the intellect thinks, reasons, judges. However, these material equipments are inert, insentient per se. Atma, the Supreme Self, is that which lends sentiency to the equipments. You are a composite personality with Atma at the core and the body, mind and intellect enveloping them. Atma, the Self, is ever at rest, the abode of absolute peace and bliss. The wise identifies with the inner self and merely allows his body, mind and intellect to operate. By withdrawing himself thus to his spiritual center, he becomes impersonal, detached, objective. His mind then turns peaceful, while his body remains active and dynamic. That is the key to success and progress in life.
So when you, they are all basics, you already know. Just going through this. First of all, every human being is composed of spirit and mind. Spirit is the self, Atma. Matter is the material components, namely the body, mind and intellect. Body, mind and intellect are per se insentient. They don't have life. It is a spirit that lends sentiency to the body, mind and intellect. So the material components are the physical body, mind and intellect. Through the body, you perceive and act. Through the mind, you feel various emotions. Through the intellect, you conceive various thoughts. Your intellect thinks, reasons and judges. So, all these equipments, they have different functions. But all of them are insentient per se. But what lends the sentiency to them? The Atma, the Self. So every human being is a composite personality of Atma and body mind. So we are nothing but BMI plus self. Body mind intellect plus self or Atma. So that Atma, the self, is the abode of peace and bliss. It is ever at rest. It is having no desire. It is paripurna. It is complete. And it doesn't have to do anything for its survival. Nothing is there apart from that Atma, the conscious. So the wise people identify with the self and allow the body, mind, intellect to operate. He says by withdrawing himself thus to a spiritual center, he becomes impersonal, detached, objective. Mind then turns peaceful. In other words, what he's trying to say is, there is nothing wrong in identifying, there is nothing wrong in working through the body mind. But your identification should be at the center, not at the periphery. So he says, by withdrawing himself, back to spiritual center, meaning the attention should be on the self. Identifying with the self, you should operate at the body level, mind level, intellect. Like a child holds on to the pillar, a wooden pillar, and swings. You know, sometimes children play that game. With one hand, they hold on the wooden pillar, and then they revolve around it. Like that, you got to hold on to the self and then revolve around using your body, mind, intellect in this way. Being objective, being impersonal, not getting detached. Giving impersonal defense, when something is happening to the body, you should understand it's happening to the body, not to you. Something happening to the mind, then you should understand that it's happening to the mind and not to you. Something is happening to the intellect, it's happening to the intellect and not to you. That's called being impersonal. Otherwise you get involved. Why it's happening to me, to me, to me? Because your attention is upon the body and you think you are the body. Your attention is upon the mind and you think you are the mind. Attention upon the intellect, you think you are the intellect. Therefore says, person who is detached and objective, personal, will be peaceful. While his body remains active and dynamic, that is the key to success and progress in life. If you want to achieve success and peace, you need to be identifying with the self and function. The self is a non-doer. It only allows the equipments to function and it doesn't get involved. All your agitations are because of your involvement.
The physical body has two sets of organs. The five organs of perception and the five organs of action. The organs of perception are the eyes, ears, nose, tongue and skin. The organs of action are the hands, feet and the organs of speech, generation and excretion. The mind contains...
If you look at your body this way, that itself brings a little bit of objectivity. In fact, in Tamil Nadu, when you go deep south, not in Chennai, but when you go deep south, even today, the person is going to have a bath. He will say, I will pour some water on my outer surface and come. In Tamil, I'm just translating it. In Tamil, they'll say, Mel kuthikvaran. Mel means upar. Ulla means inside. So this is male. Male means not male. In Tamil, male means upper surface, surface at the top. I am just cleaning my outside. That's what they say. Male kuchitra. So, body in the body, your eyes, ears, nose, tongue, skin, organ of speech, hand, feet, organ of procreation, organ of excretion. And what the physical body is housed with. The physical aspect. So when you look at it like that, then you will see this body as different from you. In the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Navat Dware Pure Dehi. Beautiful construction is there. This is a Puri, this is a city. You understand? This is a city of nine gates. This body is a city of nine gates. Navat Dware Pure Dehi. So in this city, the consciousness is reflecting and the consciousness is the Dehi, laying above. So then, you will see this as a city. It's like how you have to take care of your city. You have the Swachh Bharat and all that kind of a thing. You want to take care of your city, the body also. Because it's through this body you are expressing the self. So, at the same time, don't get affected when something happens to you. Problem today is we get so attached to the city itself. And all these people use the attachment to the city very well. They have Chennai Super Kings, Delhi Capitals, Kolkata, this thing, that thing, you know, all kinds of teams. Because you are so attached to your city. Nobody in the team will be from Chennai or Kolkata. Maybe one or two fellows. Others are all from different parts of the world and different parts of the country. But you are going mad because your city name is there. Similarly, you get attached to this body. But when you read this, physical body, how sweet all this. That itself will give you a little bit of objectivity. Continue.
The mind contains emotions and feelings. Love, kindness, passion, anger, hatred, envy, jealousy, etc. belong to the mind. The mind is also referred to as heart, which is different from the anatomical heart. Beyond the realm of the mind lies the intellect. The intellect is your faculty to think, reason, judge, decide. You will have to exercise your intellect to decide on a course of action.
See, having spoken about the body, then he goes on to the mind. The mind is the seat of feelings and emotions, desires, impulses, likes and dislikes. So, the mind will have desire and its modifications. When the desire is fulfilled, there is greed for more. There is fear of losing what you have achieved. But when the desire is interrupted, you get angry. When you have more than others, you have jealousy. Sorry, arrogance. When you have less than others, you have jealousy. So this, all these various emotions you have. But with the same mind, when it is identified with the Atma, the emotions get purified and it becomes love, kindness, compassion, etc. So the mind is nothing but seat of emotions. Sometimes they call it as heart, but heart means philosophical heart, not physical heart. Philosophically, when you say heart means the mind. Head means the intellect. This is beyond the realm of the mind, lies the intellect. Mind by itself has no direction or dimension. It is the intellect that can think and give direction to the mind. Mind cannot reason, judge. Intellect can reason, judge, analyze, discriminate. So he says you will have to exercise your intellect to decide on a course of action. If you allow the mind to take and do the action, then it's a problem. Got to make sure that your intellect guides your mind and mind in turn guides your body. Continue.
The mind and intellect together constitute your inner personality, which defines your individuality. You are what you are because of your indwelling mind and intellect. The physical body is a vehicle which carries your personality from one experience to another. You employ your body, mind and intellect to contact the world. Atma merely animates them. It has little to do with their activities. It serves like electricity in electrical gadgets. Electrical activity, electricity activates the heater to heat, cooler to cool, bulb to glow, etc. But it has nothing to do with these expressions. So does the Atma remain a mere animating principle witnessing your physical, mental and intellectual activities.
So all he's saying is, the mind and intellect together, they constitute your inner personality. Body is only the outer personality. In fact, mind and intellect are called antakarana. Mind and intellect are called as antakarana. Body is the bahyakarana, outside. He says your individuality is defined by your antakarana, mind and intellect. which defines your vision. You are what you are because of your indwelling mind and intellect. What kind of desires you have? How strong are they? How strong is your intellect? Is your intellect able to control and direct your mind? That is very important. Therefore, he says, you are what you are because of your indwelling mind and intellect. The physical body is only a vehicle which carries your personality from one experience to another. By itself, body cannot act. It's the mind and the intellect that drives the body to act. So he says, you employ your body, mind and intellect to contact the world. Through the body you act, propelled by the mind or the intellect. Obviously, it should be propelled by the intellect. But many times our body is propelled by the mind. That is why we go through stress and strain in life. So, but anyway, the inner personality drives the outer personality. But both the inner personality and the outer personality are per se insentient. Why do we say that both the inner personality and outer personality is per se insentient? They don't have per se life. Anybody? The body is made up of what? Five elements. Earth, water, fire, air, space. The subtle body, mind and intellect are also made up of the same five elements, but the pure elements, that's all. We studied this in Atma Bodha and Tattva Bodha. Mind and intellect is made up of five elements in its purest form. Physical body is made up of five elements in a simpler form. But both the body, mind and intellect are made up of the five elements. Now you tell me if the five elements have life or no life, per se. Per se, do they have life? Yes or no?
No.
No?
No.
So, then they themselves don't have life. Then this body and mind made up of them, how can they have life? So therefore he says, you employ your body, mind and intellect to contact the world. Atma merely animates them. Animates them in a sense, it's the Atma, the consciousness that enlivens the body, mind and intellect, makes it sentient. It has little to do with their activities. Atma is not responsible for the activities of the body, mind, intellect. In the presence of the Atma, the body, mind, intellect gets activated. They do what they are supposed to do. Eyes see color and form. Nose smells various fragrances. Ear hears all the sounds. Tongue tastes everything. Hand touches the world. But per se, Atma has nothing to do with this. Simply enlivening. So it merely animates them. It has little to do with their activities. Meaning Atma doesn't do anything. It is not responsible for the actions. The actions are all done at the level of the mind, intellect and body. Nothing to do with the Atma. Nothing to do with you. So Atma is akarta. Atma doesn't do anything. It's a non-doer. So when Atma is a non-doer, can Atma have any pap and punya? Can it have or no?
No.
So Atma has no paap and punya. So when you identify with Atma, you understand that you have no paap and punya. But the moment you identify with this body, mind, intellect, then you become Shweta, Sunanda, Puja, Sandhya, etc. Then you start committing sin. Because then you say, Sandhya has family. Sandhya wants to protect her family. So she may go against some other family. She may. Then we start committing the sin because the identification is at the body, mind, intellect level. That we are doing it is the doer. Aham karta ho jata hai. So when we become karta, then it's a problem. But when you understand this correctly, you will never ever have this attitude that I am the doer. Human intellect functioning. Where am I doing anything? Now these things have to be understood correctly. You can't say, the body only murdered, sir. I'm not responsible, sir. Once, there's a very interesting story they say. Once there was a fellow who committed few murders. He got caught. He was a Vedanta student. The court he was arguing, my body only murdered, I didn't murder. Luckily, the judge was also Vedanta student. So he said, you're absolutely correct. Only the body murdered, not you. Therefore, we are sending the body to the jail. No. That should not happen. Why? I am now identified with my body. When I identify with my body, then I am committing sin. So that's why he says, there's little to do with their activities. It sounds like electricity in the electrical gadgets. Electricity activates the heater to heat, cooler to cool, bulb to glow, give light, etc., etc. But it has nothing to do with these experiences, with these expressions. That is why Jesus Christ said, hate the sin, not the sinner. Because there is nobody who should be addressed as a sinner. Because everyone essentially are Atma. And as Atma, they are not sinners. So when you see somebody behaving in a particular way, you understand there's gunas are like that. But they are Atma. So you never hate any being. So that's why Jesus Christ said, hate no being. Hate the sin, not the sinner. Because there's no sinner. Why you want to hate the soul? This quality, like you go to the zoo, you understand that very well. The nature of the tiger is to be ferocious. The nature of the deer is to be weak and mild. So according to the nature of the functioning, in both of them, it's the same consciousness that is reflected. So you love both, but you don't go closer to the tiger. You may go closer to the deer and pat it. Because you understand the nature. But you also understand that there's no selfish ego. You love them. But when it comes to humanity, the problem is there. When we start identifying with the body, mind, intellect, we think we have this body, mind, intellect. When we develop this ego, the doership, with doership we create all kinds of conditioning, all kinds of samsara. So, just like how the electricity has nothing to do with the expressions, you have nothing to do with your actions. This is a very deep thing that he is saying here. So does the Atma remain a mere animating principle, witnessing your physical, mental and intellectual activities. So when you gain this knowledge, then while you are acting at the physical level or mind level or intellect level, you will be objective. But not you will get involved. You know, in the Bhagavad Gita, 13th chapter, it is mentioned as Kshetra Kshetrajna Vibhaga Yoga. He calls this body as a Kshetra, and the self is playing in this body as Kshetrajna. Kshetrajnam Chapimam Vitti Sarva Kshetreshuta. There are too many fields. Body is one field, mind is one field, intellect is one field. In all these fields, the same consciousness is functioning, playing about. When you understand this, then you don't get involved in anything. You are only merely imitating the body, mind, intellect. Has nothing to do with it. To be completely detached. Otherwise, you'll get so embroiled. So embroiled, you become so attached, then obviously whatever happens to the body happens to you. Whatever happens to the mind and intellect happens to you. Because of your attachment, because of your wrong identification. So that's all he says. You have nothing to do with the activities of the body, mind and intellect. It's a very great lesson we learn. The Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, he gives this lesson. It is Atma, Anatma, Viveka. Understand? What is Atma, what is Anatma? When you understand that, then you can identify with the Atma, then function in this world with zero attachment. So with this, we can conclude today's class. Next week, we'll take it up the next portion. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti 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 Hi Om Vayena Vacha Manasendriyeva Vidyatmanava Prakrute Svabhava Karomi Yadya Sakalam Parasmai Narayanayeti Samarpayami.